Text messaging friends is one of the most popular ways teenagers stay in touch. But now some teenagers are taking texting to another level. They're sending nude or semi-nude photos and videos of themselves to their friends. It falls into a category called sexting. And in some states, the authorities are coming down hard on the practice. Teens in Pennsylvania, Indiana, and other states are facing felony charges of possessing or purveying in child pornography. But some are asking if prosecuting kids for sex crimes is the best way to handle the problem. If you're a parent or teacher dealing with this, we'd like to hear from you. 800-989-8255 or send us an email to talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us to talk about this are Dahlia Lithwick, senior editor and legal correspondent for Slate. She wrote a column about sexting on slate.com. A version of that story also appears in this week's issue of Newsweek magazine, and she joins us from the studios at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. Good to have you with us, Dahlia.
Thank you for having me, Lynn.
Also joining us, Michael McAlexander. He is the chief deputy in the prosecutor's office in Allen County, Indiana, and his office is bringing felony obscenity charges against a teenage boy for allegedly sending a photo of his genitals to several girls in his high school class. Good to have you with us as well, Michael Alexander.
Good to be here.
Dahlia, I'd like to start with you. For those who may not be familiar with this whole idea of sexting, or sex texting, I guess it is, maybe you can explain what it is for us.
Well, it's a little bit of a fuzzy proposition. It seems to be any kind of behavior associated with taking a photograph of yourself using your cell phone or your BlackBerry, I suppose, and then sending it to someone else. This is something that seems sort of trivial, but it actually, according to a study that was recently done by the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, this is something that, believe it or not, one in five teenagers admitted during that study to either posting or sending naked photographs of themselves. So this is not something that's uncommon.
I have to say, when I read that, I was really kind of stunned by that figure because to be honest, I had actually never heard of this before. And so I thought, how could it have become so widespread so quickly, I guess?
My short answer is that my five-year-old, the first day he discovered the camera on my BlackBerry, took a picture of his own backside. So I do think this is a universal childhood phenomenon. And don't forget, we're talking in these cases about kids who are often 13 and 14. They're just being sort of wacky and young and often very, very not cognizant of the long-term consequences of putting naked pictures of yourself out into the ether.
Now, you think the criminal justice system may not be the best way for dealing with, best venue for dealing with this. Why is that?
Well, often these cases arise in schools, and the ones that I talk about in my article come up in schools. And my own sense is that, you know, 10 years ago, these are the kinds of things, if the technology had existed 10 years ago, where someone would call a parent, you'd call another parent, you'd call the principal, you'd work it out. And that going to the prosecutor's office and bringing in these very draconian felony charges, sometimes with consequences that include ending up on the sex offender registry for decades in some situations. This is just a massive, massive overreaction to what I think in most cases has nothing to do with pornography or attempts to purvey pornography.
So your sense is that kids would be getting the punishment would be way out of whack with what the kids really thought they were engaging in.
My sense is that there seems to be this impulse that says kids could get in real trouble if they put naked pictures out of themselves out there into the blogosphere. So I'm going to make sure they get into really, really serious trouble by putting them on the sex offender registry for the rest of their lives.
All right. Michael McAlexander, I want to turn to you now. And I understand that you can't talk about the specific case that you are prosecuting in Allen County, Indiana. But tell us why you think that bringing criminal charges in these cases is appropriate.
Well, I think that we need to have a variety of tools. These laws that were created, I'm sure the legislative intent behind them was to get the purveyors of child pornography. The difficulty here is once this stuff gets put into the internet or over the airwaves, no one knows where it goes. And these are designed to protect kids. I think you have to distinguish between sometimes who's taking the picture and who's receiving it and what are they doing with it. Some of the circumstances, whether it happens at school or in the privacy of a kid's bedroom, may make a difference on what is done. But what you also have to remember is if a kid takes a cell phone into a school locker room, takes pictures of fellow students and sends those around to either humiliate, embarrass, or for sexual tiltation, all of that is stuff that I think we want to have the tools available in the criminal justice system to protect those victims as well as other kids. The other thing, as far as just because we have the laws on it, particularly in our juvenile courts where most of these kids will be taken if they're under 18, we have a lot of flexibility as to what we do with them. And the laws regarding putting somebody on the sexual registry, for example, are a little stricter perhaps in the juvenile system, at least they are in Indiana, than what they are for the adults. But again, we have in the juvenile area, we can do everything from a very informal slap on the wrist form of probation to incarceration. And I would like to think that the folks that decide to go into juvenile justice have a strong sense of what is best for each child that they approach. Some kids, it may be appropriate to take fairly harsh measures against, but other kids, it's, you know, knock them upside the head a little bit and say, start thinking, realize what can happen to you. I think whenever you've got photo or telephones that can take photographs, what happened to Michael Phelps just in the last couple of weeks? Phones can go anywhere these days. So kids need to be vigilant about what can happen to them and how what might appear to be a little prank or just a little bit of fun can have some far-reaching consequences.
Well, it seems to me that this sort of gets to this question of what actually is possessing or purveying in child pornography, because if some of these kids are being charged with that, is it clear that that was their intent? I mean, how do you define that? Doesn't it usually apply to people over the age of 18 who are deliberately sending materials of sexual nature involving young kids back and forth?
Frequently, under our law, you do have to show some desire for the arousal of either the person receiving the pictures or the person sending the pictures. So that is one of the components of the crime. And again, you have to look at each case independently. But you also have the problem with child pornography, pictures of children under 16 or that are purported to be children under 16, just on their own can be considered pornography, because there's additional protections that attach to children that wouldn't necessarily apply to the definition for adult obscenity.
We're talking about the problem of sexting, that's sex texting. If you're a parent or a teacher dealing with this, we'd like to hear from you. The number is 800-989-8255. We're going to take a call now from Dean, who's calling from Columbus, Indiana. Hi, Dean.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a teacher. I teach in the middle school, and we had an incident a couple of years ago when we were on a trip to D.C. where a student videoed his roommate taking and getting out of the shower, and then proceeded to send that to just about every other student on the trip and students who were back at school. And unfortunately, I something more should have been done. What was happening was he was told to delete everything, and that was pretty much where it was left. It wasn't a bullying situation, but it was taken, because it was handled so lightly, many of the students just looked at it, scoffed it off, and thought it was a big joke.
But do you think it should have been prosecuted criminally?
I don't know if necessarily criminally would have been the way to go, but there was no consequence whatsoever other than warning that this was child porn and that they needed to have it off of their phones. If it was found, that they would, if it was found on anybody's phone after the warning, then they would be prosecuted, but nothing really came of it.
All right, well, thanks for calling in, Dean.
Thank you.
Michael, I'm just wondering, that sounds to me like a, you know, kid, they were pranking some kid, and that doesn't sound to me like a case of purveying in pornography.
And that may be the case on, assuming the school handled it well. I mean, I think most prosecutors on a lot of things like this would prefer that, the schools and the, the parents take care of it, but a lot of times they can't, or they're the ones bringing it to our attention. Again, each one you have to look at the intent behind it, and that's why I think the criminal justice system is best suited for that, to take a look at those things, and not only to determine what was the individual juvenile offender, what he was thinking about and what he was attempting to do, but also what is the best form of treatment and or punishment for him.
Dahlia, what do you think? Are there degrees of wrong here? I mean, you know, what if kids are circulating photos of nude kids to others? What do you think that, do you consider that circulating pornography, or how do you view that?
I probably still wouldn't go so far as to say that that fits under the rubric of what our sort of classic pornography scenario is. I think that's probably still a pretty far cry from what I think should be prosecuted under existing porn laws. I'll say that that's a lot farther from the scenario that we saw, for instance, in these Pennsylvania prosecutions, where we had three 13 and 14-year-old girls taking pictures of themselves naked and then sending them to their boyfriends with no intent for it to go further. And not only were the boys all charged on pornography charges, but the girls were all charged on pornography charges. So when you're in this very strange situation where you're purveying your own images of yourself, again, it's hard to see where that fits under even the more stringent child pornography standard. But one other point, if I may, just going to, I think, Dean's point and also to Michael's point, there's this other issue that's going on here that has to do with the internet and cyberbullying and power and children tormenting one another. And there's this very, very interesting meta study that came out of the Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet Studies very recently. And what it suggests is that the danger of naked photos on the internet for children is far, far less than the dangers of children bullying each other, harassing each other, treating each other badly, cyberbullying. And so I think as part of the sort of perspective of what is really going on here, it's important to say, of course it's terrible to have pictures of naked tweens on the internet, but how are kids really, really hurting each other with the internet? And is there a way that we can address that? Because I don't think this is the central problem.
All right, I just want to remind everyone that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Ronald in Oxford, Ohio. Hi, Ronald.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I just think that, children taking and sending pictures of themselves naked is part of, a coming of age or a sexual experimentation, where if they were doing it on the playground or at their own homes, which children often do, it wouldn't be as severe. And I don't think that it should be something that should be a felony or they should be prosecuted for this. Just doesn't seem that the severity of the charges really match what they're doing.
So the technology, the fact that this is going on with new technology has made it seem worse than you think it really is.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, we're in an age of globalization, and technology and everything is really changing the way that we look at the world. And this is just something that's new to kids, and it's just a new forum for them to express themselves sexually.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call, Ronald. Michael McAlexander, what do you think about what the point that Ronald just made?
Well, I think it's easy to look at very young children and recognize that there is a level of experimentation that goes on. But certainly in an age when we have employers viewing Facebook and MySpace to see kids having drinking parties, and holding that against them years later, I think we need to take every step we can to protect these kids from themselves. They may be experimenting, but they don't realize that this could follow them along for the rest of their lives. And if it unfortunately takes the coercion of the state and the criminal justice system to get some of that done, I share the concern about being too heavy-handed, but part of this is trying to get their attention so that they understand that they are really playing with fire, not only with their friends, but also with their own futures.
All right, let's take a call from Keith, calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, Keith.
Yes, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I think that there needs to be a stricter policy with it. I teach middle school, and I just don't think that there needs to be any leniency whatsoever whenever it is going to be a breeding ground for future sex offenders. If they know they can get by with it, it's going to continue. There's not going to be any examples of anything made, and it just needs to be stopped at a certain point.
Have you seen this happen in your middle school?
Well, no, not that I know of. On my team, it hasn't. I'm sure it's gone around a little bit. But the first time that I would catch it, I think that it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be dealt with real strict. It needs to be shown as an example. And that way it keeps anybody else from doing it. And I think it would harbor the fact of future sex offenders and predators if they know that they can keep getting by with it and keep getting by with it, and they're going to start exposing themselves at a young age. It is going to do nothing except for bring out doing it.
Okay, Keith. Your phone's beginning to break up a little bit, but thanks so much for your call, Keith. And Dahlia, I just sort of want to know what you think of would be an alternative to prosecution that would really bring the message home to kids that this is pretty serious, they shouldn't do this.
Well, I think this is one of those situations where we have an existing structure that's even older than our child pornography laws. We call it the family. I think parents need to sit down with their kids and say, one, you shouldn't have a cell phone. But if you do have a cell phone, you shouldn't be using it to take dirty pictures. And here's why. You know, there are, as Michael says, very, very serious consequences. This can stay in the internet world forever and ever. Bosses will use this information someday when you're looking for a job. The consequences are dire. One of the things that's very, very interesting about this teen pregnancy study was that 71% of kids know that there are very serious consequences to having these pictures out there. So I think families need to step up and do a better job. And I think schools need to calm down and not turn this into literally what's becoming a federal case.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Dahlia Lithwick is senior editor and legal correspondent for the online magazine Slate. She joined us from studios at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. And Michael McAlexander is chief deputy in the prosecutor's office in Allen County, Indiana. He was with us from the studios of radio station WOWO in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Tomorrow, the Academy Awards. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington.